Are you ready for the weekend yet? We have events, news, and a guest for you to enjoy this Lake Life weekend. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Lake Life Weekend Podcast. My name is Dirk, I'm your host, and we are already approaching weekend 13 of 2018. I think spring has finally sprung, or already sprung, and we cannot wait for open waters. I am looking forward to this, and you are. And we have a special recording here from our Explore Lake Life Expo this past February. And this is interesting for you if you already have property in Lakes Country, or if you're considering to find your property in Lakes Country. We have three guests on stage during this recording. Lars Knobloch from Nordic Companies speaking about cabin maintenance. Then Lisa Jaskin Peterson from Jack Chivers Realty speaking about owning rural property. And then we have John Bagu here. He is a solar technology expert, and he talks a little bit about solar technology. This program was called Off the Grid, Living in Lakes Country, and it was very interesting. You please enjoy this episode. All updates on our Lake Life Weekend podcast always at lakelifeweekend.com, and also check out our event schedule, news, and hidden gems, road trips, all such things on our website, updated daily. If you have ideas for upcoming programs or any suggestions, please feel free to email us at hello@lakelifeweekend.com. We much appreciate you tuning in, and I would like to say thank you to our sponsor for this episode is At Ease Dock and Lift from Frazee. You can visit with John or Mike at their location on Highway 10, just leaving Detroit Lakes towards Perham. And after the first exit to Frazee, they have a brand new facility, and they have lots of docks and lifts waiting for you, and they consult you with all you need to enjoy your shore and your lake the most this season. Visit At Ease Dock and Lift. Talk to John or Mike. Thank you very much for supporting this podcast, and thank you very much for tuning in. Now, I don't want to keep this any longer for our live on stage final podcast here. Enjoy and have a wonderful weekend ahead. Hello again, and welcome to our final program today. We're going to speak about off-the-grid living, and I have with me Lars of Nordic Home Inspections, Lisa of Jack Chivers Realty, and then John, a scientist, Canadian from Canada, international today, speaking about cabin, winterizing, cabin inspection, rural properties, and then clean technology, solar technology. So stay tuned. And I will just pass that on right away to Lisa, introducing to us me as a city boy, not growing up rural Minnesota, always new land, to have questions answered about how difficult is it to bring infrastructure, have a well, how is that with the septic, and I hand this over to you, and you can tell us how easy it is to live off the grid or leave the city to enjoy lake life or living in Lakes Country. Hello, Lisa. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Dirk. Moving into the country is a piece of cake. You shouldn't worry about it, whether you're on a lake, whether you're just out in the woods. It just takes a little bit of planning. Rather than having city water and sewer, you have to drill a well and septic. You know, that's really the biggest difference. And then to make sure that you're not too far off the grid, you to bring the power in. And I've been on rural properties where it's way too expensive to bring power in. So then that's where your new friend will come in.
We have alternatives today with solar technology.
Exactly. But most of the time you're dealing with roads that you have power to the roads, and they just trench the power in, drill your wells, and you know we've got many professionals in the area that are well drillers. Get your water tested, and you know depending on your the quality of your water, you might have to get a system installed to maybe take out some of the rust or something. But it's nothing to fear. It really isn't. Rural living is wonderful.
It's easier than one thinks. And I didn't introduce you. Tell us a little bit about yourself. You have developed, you have a building background, you're a licensed real estate agent, but you build many homes outside of city limits. So you mentioned it sounded really easy. Plowing a road, drilling a well. So how many, do you know how many people live off-grid? To me, off-grid means anything but city. So maybe my definition of off-grid is a bit different than for you, but how many people live just outside of city limits?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know.
But we have school buses that pick kids up. So for example, Detroit Lakes, there is a big route. So Becker County, has a like Detroit Lakes has a big radius for the school bus to bring children into the school. Yeah, so that is also maybe off the grid a problem that may come. How do I can I raise a family remote? Mm-hmm. Maybe mm-hmm. my definition of off grid is your definition of living a little remotely. Mm-hmm. So, but it is. What is your experience? You met a lot of people that chose that lifestyle.
Oh, absolutely. Especially with family. You know, there's a lot of people that want their kids to grow up kind of like we did. Go build a tree fort. You know, you can't get into too much trouble in the woods. And, you know, so it's, yeah, it's a healthy way of living. And there's nothing wrong with city living either. I've done that as well. But it's really nice when you do have a family to yeah.
Have them connect with nature mm-hmm. And do all that. Mm-hmm. So... is it expensive to live rural, or is it actually cheaper? What do you think?
You know, it's probably a horse apiece in our area. A lot of times when you go into city developments, you're looking at about $20,000 worth of special assessments, and that's when you have this city water and sewer in a development, and then you connect. And if you go rural, you're probably looking close to that. It depends on your soil type too with the septics. And there's where you get the experts involved. Depending on your soil type will dictate what kind of septic system you have to have. And some of them are more expensive than others. So I would say it's very comparable to that $20,000.
So to get connected, meaning with water and the wastewater mm-hmm. is roughly $20,000.
Worth of special assessments. The connection fee is different. That's usually about $2,000 to $2,500.
I meant to connect a house, meaning like I build off the grid and I need to connect it with something. Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's about the $20,000.
Yeah, I'm the foreigner here. I apologize. Mm-hmm. But so it's $20,000, and then do you know how much it is to connect to the electric infrastructure if I choose the traditional route?
Is well, it how they charge you by the foot, I believe, you know, to trench in from wherever the power is out on the road, wherever that is, and then depending on how far in, that's
so it
your
can
bill.
Be costly.
It can be very costly if you have to go quite a distance.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. And what do you like most? Because you grew up on Ice Cracking Lake?
Many Point, up on Many Point and Round Lake, yep.
Oh, okay, so you grew up rural.
Rural,
and
very rural.
Very rural, okay. So coming from that experience, what is your lake life? What do you like most about, what's your experience? What do you like most about growing up like that or living like that?
I liked that we used our imagination, our creativity, and it's fun to see how that upbringing has shaped my future. You know, I my brother and I, and now we build houses together, we built tree forts together, and we were always creating things. We didn't sit around and play video games or anything like that, or go to the malls or things like that. We played and created, and yeah, it's put the passion in me then, and it's what, you know, what I continue to do, and I raise my children that way. you know, I want them to have that same experience. So,
so lake life for you is being very active. You enjoy the active part about lake life.
Absolutely, all year round, for real. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, thank you very much. That was a good start. If one has more questions, you're available later. Maybe we just pass that on to Lars, speaking about having a structure, a dwelling, and is it working? No.
All right, now we can hear me? Okay. So my name is Lars, and I am the owner of Nordic Companies. We do commercial and residential inspections in our area, and we go a lot out to the lakes too to look at lake cabins. And one of the things we see out there is probably lack of maintenance. I think we don't have that many months, summer months of the year, where we can be at their cabin, and when we have those nice days, we don't want to do maintenance. And we see these because there's lack of maintenance. And when it comes to the exterior of the building, anything wood, I think, is not necessarily a good idea out at the lakes. And one of the reasons for that is that we have a lot of trees, and the trees are throwing, basically putting the cabin in a big shade. And any building materials can deteriorate faster if it never gets a chance to dry out, and if we don't maintain all the wood. So the wood trim, wood windows, wood siding, fascia, soffit, steps, decks, and so on. Right. Yep. So it's the same with your roof as well. Your cabin is sitting in a shade, and moss is building up on the roof, and moss is trapping a lot of moisture and is causing the shingles to deteriorate much faster. So before the winter, you know, it's good to do an outside inspection and look at all the wood, if there's any peeling paint, and maybe even get on your roof every 3 to 4 years and take a look at the moss condition up there and see if you can have that cleaned off. You really? There you go. You're on top of it. Yeah. Other things is simple things like gutters. Again, there's a lot of trees and a lot of leaves that will clog your gutters, and you know you're not going to clean them. So why not install gutter guards on your gutters, which will be a screen that protects your gutters from getting clogged, which leads you to moisture problems. And that was the next thing I wanted to talk about, because it's very common for us to see mold and moisture problems too in cabins. And some of the problems we're running into is the same as we see here too, that people don't take care of their grate around the cabin. Grade, yeah, so water flows right back towards the building, and it sits along the foundation, ends up in your basement or in your crawl space. So it's important to create a good grade and have swale the water basically around the cabin and into the lake, or away from the lake. And we have a little pamphlet at our booth that explains, you know, grade and how it should be done, and the problems that comes with bad grade. So feel free to stop by and grab some of those. Also, we see, I think in the 50s and 60s, they allowed to build the lake homes closer to the lake than what they do now. 71, okay. Right. So we see in a lot of cabins like that their crawl spaces have water, and they're really damp, and a lot of people are ignoring that kind of problem because it's maybe wet, you know, not that many months or days of the year. And also they're pretty low head clearance, so they don't get down there very often. But when we get down there, we often see rot on the floor joists, mold on the joists, and on the subfloor. So it's better to be ahead of the game and get down there, assess the situation, put down a moisture barrier on the ground to keep the moisture down, install a sump pump if necessary on these lake homes specifically that are closer to the lake and are taking on water in the crawl space. And back to mold too, a lot of things, one thing that people are not aware of is that mold can actually grow on dust. And I think lake homes often can be very dusty because we have your windows open and you're too busy enjoying your time at the lake that you don't want to spend too much time doing detailed cleaning. And then you winterize your house and you know, you don't spend any time there in a long time. And without having, you know, you shut your heating system off, you don't have any air movement anymore, and you have dust sitting on your walls, and you get humidity in there, and mold starts forming on the dust. So actually, it's a great idea to go over your cabin and do a detailed cleaning before the winter. You have no idea how many phone calls we get from people that are concerned about a mold condition at their lake cabin. Because they're having their grandchildren there. You're inviting the people you care about the most to your cabin, and you want to make sure that it's a safe environment to be in. And then we start looking around, and we shine our flashlight on the, you know, the content, the furniture, and you see that there's mold growing on the dust. So that's another good thing to do. And back to the air circulation, you turn the heat off, right? And you turn your everything off. If you have a gas forest or a forest air furnace, it might be good to have your fan, the circulating fan on your furnace, run for a period of time. You can buy a thermostat, for example, that you can set to run 15 minutes every hour, or even just floor fans and hook them up to timers and let them run for an hour or two. This is a real thing. We get phone calls all the time about mold problems with just mold growing on surfaces from high humidity and dust. So, and when it comes to winterizing, obviously, we are usually turning the water off and turning the heat off. Other things that could be good to do besides cleaning the gutters before the winter is to take a walk around the cabin and seal up any holes you have. Because you know when it gets colder, all those little critters and mice and bats are going to also inspect your cabin and try everything they can to find their way in. So the tiniest hole you'll see mice get in through, we very commonly see evidence of mice in attics, in little tunnels in the insulation, and they're coming in often through trees. Almost every time we do an inspection on a lake cabin and there's big trees, branches overhanging the roof, we find tons of tunnels in the insulation in the attic from mice that's finding their way in through the roof. So when you then come back to the cabin in the spring, when you turn the water on, biggest advice I could do then is to just do a thorough inspection, run water through all fixtures. And if you have a crawl space, get down there, make sure nothing is leaking because things might change over the winter. So that's just some of the things to have in mind. Another thing, if you are looking at buying a lake cabin, the best advice I can give, you know, if I just think for myself, and I'm having a completely different mind than what you guys have when about buying a cabin, but I would want to buy something that has as little maintenance as possible, as little wood as possible, because you know you're not going to keep up with the maintenance because no one does. Besides that, when you have an inspection done on a lake cabin, you should expect that there will be a lot of things that's found. There'll be a long list of maintenance, minor repairs, and it's important to not get overwhelmed by those kinds of things. Focus on the bigger parts, bigger components of the building, like your roof, your siding, windows. We don't have a lot of foundation problems out in the lakes because the soil is much sandier there than what it is here. But electrical issues. Seems like most cabin or lake home owners think they're electricians, but they're really not. We find a lot of handyman electrical work. But focus on the bigger things. It's going to cost a lot. Retaining walls is actually a huge thing that people don't really think about. You're sitting kind of in the hill, and there's retaining walls built around the cabin, and they're starting to lean, and it's very, very expensive to redo and rebuild a retaining wall. So that is something that's often forgotten. And otherwise, I guess think resale. Is that a good one?
It's a good one.
You want to talk about that? I think there was a lot of information. Once you own or you have property, to keep it in shape, so that you also have a resale opportunity and not broke it. Before I hand this over to John, tell us a little bit. What do you like about lake life? I know you live in the city, but what do you like about lake life?
So we don't have a lake home, but we like to go out there and enjoy our time. We usually have been renting like pontoons and stuff like that to go out and spend time. I know I should be visiting you, but I haven't done that yet. So I know I have an open invitation. But I would like to explore more about the lakes and spend more time there. So that would be a goal for me. And maybe go fishing and taking the kids out. But.
Boating and water, we are both European. Lars is from Norway, I'm from Germany. So boating is still something very special for us because we don't have that much access to the lakes as you do growing up with it. It's just normal to be by a lake, be on a lake. For us, it isn't. So it's still very special. Thank you very much. And now I would like John introduce us real quick and explain to us technology opportunity for clean energy.
Well, thank you, Dirk, for inviting me. Actually, now that I'm here, I realize what I have to say is kind of very appropriate to the audience and the topic, because if you think about lake life and the people who live in rural environments, it's about clean living. And what I'm interested is in clean technology, both with solar and wind, and clean transportation with electric vehicles. And that way, we really get back to not polluting our environment, especially the most important environment, which is our house, the air we breathe, not the air somewhere in Alaska or Antarctica. We're concerned about the air we breathe in Fargo, the air you breathe in Minnesota. That's what we want to kind of keep as clean as possible. And so just to give you some background, my house was for 4 years the largest solar producer in Fargo, which is pathetic. I'm so happy that somebody finally beat me. We got the first ever community solar gardens in North Dakota in Fargo, so they beat me. I'm also the first person to have an inductively charged electric vehicle, which means out of the 300 people in North Dakota that have an electric vehicle, I'm the laziest, so I don't have to plug in anymore. I charge through space, and I just am plain lazy, and it's so nice to be lazy, so convenient. So I really view that as the future of electric vehicles, because people have to plug in every time they drive it. They're not going to like it. If you can just drive up and charge, they're going to like it. So I'm here to say that I firmly believe spending money on clean technology is the best money you'll ever spend in your life. And I can say that because I'm pretty stupid when it came to spending money on other things that I look back on and shake my head at. So, you know, this is the best way to spend your money. So now that I've admitted I'm lazy and stupid, I can get on with my presentation. I broke all the public speaking rules you're supposed to. But actually, just to show you how good a deal it is, when I take a look at, say, what is the best way you can spend your money? Well, if it gives you your money back when you spend it, and even greater than the value that you spend, so you don't have to spend money in the future, that's a good criteria. If you spend money that helps other people around you in your community, that's a good criteria. And the most important one is if you spend money and it helps your health, and it helps especially your children's health and the environment, that's a great criteria. So isn't it nice if you can spend money, which you can do all three things at once? And so for the first criteria, I can tell you that with solar panels in my electric vehicle, last year between February and October, so 9 months, I spent $100 total on energy for my 2,700 square foot house in Fargo and driving an electric vehicle. $100 total for doing both those things for 9 months. That's almost free driving and living with solar and electric vehicles. How much did you guys probably spend? Well, if you take a look at your electric bills for those 9 months, add up all your gas station receipts, it's probably in the thousands of dollars when you combine them. So I'm saving thousands of dollars a year. That's a great deal if I can save that money. What is interesting, because this is a rural kind of setting, I had a associate at North Dakota State University come and give a presentation on corn ethanol. And I, at the end, I just had to ask him, so how much money do you get per acre of corn to produce ethanol? And we did a comparison, and it turns out, let me give you this simple multiple choice question. Do you want, if you have 1,000 acres of land, do you want to grow corn for ethanol for energy, or do you want to put solar panels on the 1,000 acres? What do you think the answer is? Well, it's solar panels. And the reason is, if I have 1,000 acres of corn, I'm doing $1 million a year of business. If I have 1,000 acres of solar panels, I'm doing $30 million a year of business. He didn't like that calculation because he's into corn and ethanol. And he looked it over, and 5 days later, yeah, I'm absolutely right. So you get 30 times more money with solar panels than growing corn for ethanol. So if you have like 100 acres of land and it's not being used for much right now and you want to make, oh, let's see, that would be $3 million a year of business, put solar panels on the land. And if you're in Minnesota, it's a lot easier to do than North Dakota. So in a sense, you can start to use your land with solar energy generation to pay for buying the place in the first place.
Before we become investors, and I don't know how much money we need to do that, let's do it step by step and make a little difference to environment. And when we found a home, or we found a place, and then we found a home, my thought was, do I need to be connected to city electricity? Can I actually find an affordable alternative with just my roof line? Or how difficult or how easy is it for me as an average consumer to power myself through solar? Are we advanced enough already with the available solar panels, or is it very expensive to install it? When does it break even for me? Is it a 3-year, 5-year, 10-year usage to be cheaper to make a difference? Maybe a couple words on that.
So now that I've introduced like solar is a really good deal, let's get it to a personal level. All right, so if I had a nice house in the woods, I would probably spend about $14,000 on about 7 kilowatts of solar panels. That's about 30 solar panels, and that would probably power the house quite easily. Whether I should connect to the grid or not, my advice is if you can connect to the grid cheaply, do so, because the grid is kind of like your ultimate battery backup. When the solar panels aren't working great, that's where you get your energy from. If you can connect cheaply, like if it's not too far away to do so, do so. If it is too far away and too expensive, like you're too many feet away and it's just an enormous price to do so, by all means get batteries instead. They're a lot cheaper now than when I bought my system 5 years ago, and they're a lot better now too. That will add to the cost of your system, but it's well worth it. And I would also say if it's a rural setting, get a small wind turbine. You can even put it on the rooftop of your house, even if it's like 500 watts or 1,000 watts. On really cloudy days in Fargo, it tends to be windy. I think Minnesota is probably the same. That will even take the place of batteries better, because now you're generating energy throughout the day with a small turbine. So I would still mostly go for solar, but have some wind component, have some battery component if you can't attach to the grid. And overall, the payback is, well, if it's solar by itself, you get paid back in 12 years. The lifetime of the system is about 25. So you double your investment over time, and it's clean energy. And you feel good about using energy. I can take baths all I want now, and I don't feel guilty because I'm not burning coal to do it.
Well, I think that was very insightful. Thank you very much. If you have questions beyond what we have discussed, I think all speakers are available. And you are at a little booth over there where you have solar panels to touch and to see. Okay, I was looking from the kids' perspective, I guess. No, but yeah.
They're tempered glass.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for coming again to this year's Expo. Thank you for following our program, and you have a wonderful rest of your day. Thank you for coming up on stage. Yeah, this was already our newest episode of the Lake Life Weekend podcast. We sure hope you enjoyed it. Tune in again next week with another great guest and updates. Always check out our website, lakelifeweekend.com. And if you have some comments, please feel free to email us at hello@lakelifeweekend.com. And you have a wonderful weekend ahead.